Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 31 of Boston's Best. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guest on today's podcast is Mike Haynes. Mike and his brother Brian are the co-founders of the Haynes Group, a commercial construction management company located out of West Bridgewater. They started the company in 2001 and have had a steady rise to the top of the ranks since then with over 600 completed projects. Mike shares with us that in his early to mid-20s, after working in the big box retail trade world, he reached out to his brother to start their own company. Mike and Brian are one's yin to the other's yang. They are both type A personalities, but complement each other perfectly when it comes to growing the business. They started out with just the two of them, and they now employ 50 people. In this episode, we talk about how Mike's father was his biggest mentor and owned a convenience store that focused on the client service. The Haynes Group focuses on creating the a la carte concierge type experience and creating deep relationships with all of their clients. Their very first client is still a client of theirs today, 20 years later. They also focus on having a fun and relaxed office atmosphere with their employees. I've seen their office. He's not lying. And be sure to listen to the end, as Mike shares the most common misconception of the construction industry, what he'd tell his 18-year-old self, and how he defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week, I have Mike Haynes. Mike is the co-founder with his brother, Brian, of the Haynes Group, construction managers out of West Bridgewater. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's great to have you on.
Thank you very much for having us. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah, man. We've known each other. Let's think about it. I think next month will be actually 8 years since we first met each other at the gym. Yeah.
I probably had more hair and a little bit of shape back then.
That's all right. But yeah, it's been a long time. So I'm excited to have you on. You know, before we get into the business itself, you're based out of West Bridgewater. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up in the area or?
I did. I grew up in the town next door. I grew up in Easton, Mass, small little town when I grew up. I had a brother and a sister. My dad owned a small business locally, and we lived a small town life. You know, it was a nice childhood. Let's put it that way. I had a good middle-class childhood.
Yeah. I mean, I spent 12 years in Easton, so I love Easton. I love that area. So how did you get into construction? Is that something you always wanted to do as an early stage of your life? Did you go into another career first?
Yeah. So construction really was not on my radar. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, that I had that entrepreneurial spirit. I always knew that I could work hard at whatever it was. So I never really had this sense that we were going to get into construction or I was going to get into construction. And as I kind of went through college, I worked in the trade show business right out of school, which was real fun. I traveled the world, learned a lot about marketing. It was probably one of the more exciting times of my life. I got the opportunity to meet a lot of people during the dot-com boom, the Bill Gates of the world. You know, if you remember the Palm Pilot, you know, so
yeah.
The opportunity to meet a lot of those people, and a lot of them had that entrepreneurial like energy.
Yeah.
And over the course of time, I was like, I can't just do this for someone else. It's in my blood. You know, my brother was in construction and I was in the trade show world. And as I started to gravitate into that, in that world, we shifted into this big box retail store display scenario. And it was a lot of commercial construction going on. The old company I was with, we kind of worked our way through that process and I got to lead it. And then just called my brother one day and said, you know what? I think we should do construction. I think we should get after this thing. And we just jumped in feet first with, I don't want to say lack of knowledge, but how about a lot of piss and vinegar?
Yeah, there you go. But sometimes you need that though, too, because I mean, I don't know if this is the same for you, but you know my story. I got into, my business 4 years ago now, and ignorance really is bliss sometimes. If I knew just how difficult the industry is, I don't know if I would have had the balls to go for it. I fully believe that because it's not easy, especially for being an entrepreneur. You don't really know how difficult something is until you've come across the first problem. And then you discover that problem and there's like 17 more things you got to do to prevent it from happening again.
Yeah, dude, you're an entrepreneur at heart though. Like solving the problem is the greatest part of the job. So yeah. That's what I love about it. Like every day's, I don't want to call it a problem. Every day is a task that you have to, a problem you have to solve, a situation that you have to provide answers to and pull your team together and make it happen. That's what I love about it. It's something new every day.
Yeah, I agree. Entrepreneurial spirit is, it's infectious too. When you get around a group of people, like, you know, like you had mentioned, you get around all those people, all it makes you want to do is just create more and more business for yourself and just go solo. It's just
infectious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. It is really people, right? So being an entrepreneur is about, you know, putting the right people around you, having great teams, feeding off the energy and, you know, kind of spotting those ideas, those places in life that, you know, maybe you think you can tackle and be successful.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, business itself is relationships. A lot of people think if you're in quote unquote sales, you know, you're a salesman, but at the end of the day, it's relationships. If people know, like, and trust you, they're going to use you for whatever service it is you provide versus someone that they don't know off the street. You know,
100%, 100%. And that's what, like, you know, I enjoy that part of it. You know, when you picked up the phone and called, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, I know you, this would be fun. Have a good conversation. I'd do this off camera.
Yeah. Right. When you and Brian started this, you had mentioned the team factor. Was it just you two to start? Did you immediately hire somebody? How'd you go about, you know, from the ground up first days?
So when we got together, it was just the two of us. We kind of set this plan of action in place that was, listen, we're going to use construction as a base to build capital, right? We knew we could do it. We knew we could be successful at it. Two of us just put our nose down and we grounded out, built our client base. It took a lot of time. I worked two jobs when I first started the business, both did. And, you know, there were days we didn't know if we were going to make it, you know? And so it was the two of us. And our first job, we just luckily landed like a television studio, right? Like not a house with windows. But so we met a guy who ran a local TV studio and asked us to build it for him. And that was kind of it, right?
Like, wow.
He feet wet right out of the gate.
Yeah, that's awesome. Especially when you hit a home run like that, just to start.
Right? I don't know if it was a home run, but it was certainly a lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. So how long into it did you guys... At what point was that the moment where you realized that you guys could actually be really successful in this? Did it take some time?
I would have to say one of the things we always told ourselves is that anybody, I don't want to say anybody, but there are a lot of people out there who can build. They can build walls, they can build roofs and windows, and they can design, but can they service people, right? So we kind of found this niche in this higher end kind of concierge customer service.
Yep.
We like to think that we're that company. I mean, I hope we are. We still have our first client. Wow. 20 years ago. So for us, it became very personal, you know, kind of just said, listen, no one else out here is babysitting these people. No one out here is giving these people everything they need, a la carte service, you know, from the estimating to the construction side of it, to close out, to warranty work. You know, our goal was always we don't have this message anymore, but we first started business, like, we will respond to your phone call within 24 hours, right? We will be right there for you when you need us. It gets harder as time goes on, but we still kind of carry that same mentality that, you know, we're here for you, whatever your problem is. And I think that's how we kind of found the niche and when we knew we were onto something. It wasn't so much the construction piece. It was the, wait a second, there's a little niche here to really provide some really good service.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, the services and the experience that people have when they work with you is what's going to keep them. I mean, if you have the same customer, your very first customer, would you say 20 years ago is when you guys started this?
Sure. Yeah.
That's pretty phenomenal, you know? So what are some of the early challenges that you guys faced when you first started off? I mean, try to keep the list to just a couple, I would say.
It can be miles long.
Yeah.
Biggest challenges that we faced, you know, starting out and always, I would say there are knowledge gaps, right? Because every day is a learning curve. Yeah. And when you get into the industry, you think everything, you know, you think very linear. Understanding that there's so much to the process, so much to how the successful guys do it, and making our way through those knowledge gaps, I would say, whether it was construction or engineering, or really how they were looking for, you know, contracts to be done. There were some contract gaps. But, you know, you try to learn fast. And then, you know, probably the second biggest problem is people, right?
Yeah.
Finding the right people that will fit on the team. We surrounded ourselves, you know, at the beginning and now with some really good people. You know, we make it a goal here to retain. Retention's big. Still have relationships with people who have left. I think that's super important.
Definitely.
We didn't always hire for the skill set. We hired for the person.
Yep.
And we found that out. But it took a little while to figure that out. That was the best scenario. So those are probably the two biggest kind of challenges that we ran into as young, you know, young entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Because you guys have a pretty big team now, right? How many employees do you have?
We're about 50.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's pretty impressive. That's awesome.
It's fun. It's fun. You know, we're always looking for more good people, right?
Yeah.
So our goal is you run across a good person. Maybe they don't, you know, the skill set's not exactly what you're looking for, but they're a great person. You try and grab them and see if you can, you know, utilize their skill set, personality, and become successful together.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. You walk into your office, you got a pretty sweet office set up, you know, like you guys got some beer taps going on. Like, it's a nice, relaxed atmosphere in general. You guys really good with the community aspect of your employees and your team.
One of the things we drive home here, and it took a little while to learn this as a kid, right? When you're selling your business or you're doing things, you kind of get off track and be not authentic, right?
Yeah.
And as I worked my way through, I just, you know, if we're just us, if we're just authentic and we are who we are and we treat people right, business will come, the good times will come, the people will, you know, surround us. Yep. And the office was kind of, we tried to emulate who we are. My brother and I were walking up the stairs one day. It was a kind of a blank slate. And he's like, what do we like to do? We're like, oh, hey, I like to sit in an Irish pub and have a, you know, have a Guinness or whatever. And that's just kind of how it came about. And it really is kind of the center of the company now.
Yeah.
Everybody congregates around it once a week or so. And
yeah,
just have a good time, you know?
That's what it's all about, man. That's what it's all about. You know, before you got into this, did you have any mentors that you leaned on when you guys first started?
So I did. I had a couple through, you know, before I started. Obviously, my dad was a mentor. My dad owned a convenience store when I was a kid, which is a lot of hard work. You know, those are long days, and he wasn't the type of guy to hire people, you know. So he just worked his butt off. And he, you know, in a convenience store, you really have to service people, right? You have to treat them right to get them coming back.
Yeah.
And it was a mom and pop in the middle of nowhere, and he grounded out. And so going through the process, he didn't say a lot. But what he didn't say was probably the most visible to me. You know, when he didn't say something, you kind of knew, all right, we're doing good. But he was very, very, he was probably the best mentor you could have because he was very supportive. You know, he was right there, taught you the little things about mostly people, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And my former boss, I would say, you know, we had a great relationship. We still talk, you know, right as COVID hit. He's in the trade show business. He took a pretty good whack. And it hurt me, even though it's 20 years ago that I worked for him, it hurt me to see a guy who had built this $100 million company, you know, have it taken right out from underneath him. And, you know, I took some time to step back and think of all the things he had taught me, really trial by fire, you know. Yeah. He spent his time with me. He would take me on vacations. And we would just talk business. And I was a 24-year-old kid. I don't know at 24 that you respect that as much as you do at 46.
Yeah.
It was, I think for me, that was, you know, as COVID came around, I started to feel that. And you start to feel for people, you start to realize who really does mean a lot to you in that, you know, in life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Totally agree. So it's not easy to start your own business. Obviously, you guys had some early challenges, but I find a similarity amongst business owners. You had mentioned the entrepreneurial mindset. Do you have a routine? Are you pretty OCD? Are you a type A or anything like that? I'm type A. Like I'm
definitely not OCD.
Yeah.
That's definitely not something I've ever been described as. ADD maybe, but not OCD, which I actually believe that works to my advantage, by the way. I'm an A type. I refer to myself, I actually just pulled it off my LinkedIn page, but for years I just referred to myself as head coach, right? I look at things, my job is to, you know, help people succeed in the position they're in or find the position for them to be in. It's not always easy. That's my mentality. My kind of daily routine is to, I very rarely sit in my office. I walk around, I talk to people. I spend more time leaning over their desk, probably to a frustration for them, but I do spend more time just, you know, talking through the day, try to help people through the problems. I wish I could do it more, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
To get 50 guys, it's a little bit, you know, taxing,
sure.
But for me, that's my routine. It's just a, you know, an A-type, let's put you in the right spot. Let's help coach you up and see what happens.
Yeah. What about your brother? Do you guys balance each other out? Is he the similar like yourself?
Honestly, it's a perfect balance. It really is. He's an A type. He's entrepreneurial, but he's different. He's very he's low key. Probably one of the best partners you could have. He definitely offsets my skill sets.
Yeah.
A little bit more calm. Well, we shared a bedroom. How about this? We shared a bedroom when we were little kids for 18 years, right? So we know the ins and outs of each other. We never really fight. We have good discussions, but yeah, he definitely offsets who I am, and it works. It works.
Both of us. That's good. So let's get into the full suite of services that you guys provide. You know, you focus a lot on the concierge and the relationship. What are the full suite of services that you guys provide? Do you have a niche that you focus more on? Or
so our niche is commercial construction, right? So so I know it's painting with a broad brush, but within that space, we do a lot of retail work.
Yeah,
we do a lot of office space, a lot of high end A class space. We do some medical spaces. We do quite a bit of industrial, so really in that space. But our kind of newest, most exciting niche is hospitality. We really dug our claws into this hospitality world. And I think, and I don't know, I'm not a psychologist, but I think it's because of our customer service mentality. And, you know, whether you're a brewery or a hotel, that's what you're there for. You're serving the people, right? So I think for them, they understand that that little extra that you're going to provide. And it's worked. It's a lot of fun. But the hospitality world has been exciting, to say the least. That right now is our one of our central focuses. We still work on the other stuff. Office space, we can crush those. Retail, obviously during COVID, it's been a little bit different. More calls from Amazon than you do from the retail stores. You know, any one of those spaces we can be successful at. We run, you know, three different management teams who run in those channels. So they direct themselves, and then we, you know, we just support up from up top with some guidance and what they need for bodies. Is it's worked out well. We do also have, which I'd be reluctant, I should make sure that I mention it. We spun off last January, spun out a service, we call it Rapid Response. It's a service division for our clients and anybody else who's looking, but right now, mostly clients, if they have a rapid need. There's, you know, tomorrow we're going up to the Sheraton up on the North Shore, and they had a flood. So they called us, like, we need help. So we'll respond in kind and look at it from whether it's a construction project or if it is a 3-4 day quick fix. And we send in a, you know, kind of rapid response team that can take care of the problem real, real quick. It can be anything from a doorknob to a fire. You know, we don't really get into remediation, so I don't want to oversell that part of it, but we put it all back together, you know? Nice. That's a nice little niche.
Yeah, no, it really is. What about location? You guys mainly, you mentioned the North Shore. I know you're in West Bridgewater, but I know you have a good presence in Boston too. What about location? You guys pretty much.
Location, we're all New England. We used to be nervous about selling that, but over the past few years, we've really been successful as far up as Portland, Maine. Done 4 or 5 projects in Portland. We've done them on Long Island, which isn't really New England, but we've reached to Long Island, and you know, we've done quite a bit of work in Connecticut. So anything in New England, we actually have our first project in Burlington, Vermont coming. It actually got canceled due to COVID, but it looks like it's going to come back online as soon as things kind of die off. But yeah, I mean, New England, we are right now currently tippy-toeing in another state, which maybe I'll announce you another day, but we are we have our claws in someplace else right now.
Nice.
So hopefully that'll work out.
Yeah, hopefully. Do you have a favorite? I just randomly thought of this question. Do you have a favorite project you've done? That area that you're most proud of that just immediately sticks out?
Yeah. And I think we have a mutual contact there. Mighty Squirrel Brewery is, it's one of my favorites because of the story of Mighty Squirrel. We got to meet them before they had a place, before they had a location picked. And we were able to ride around with them and all of us search for the right location.
Oh, no way.
They had been in Boston and Cambridge, and we were looking all over the place. And I don't remember how it exactly occurred, but I'd happened to be in Waltham one day and I called Naveen.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, I just found this really cool place. You know, it's out by the colleges in Waltham. And there's a park behind it. It just seems like it might fit. And boom, it just happened. We all got together and we got to be part of the design process with them.
That's
we
cool.
Got to have a lot of input and they were really good people, which is, I don't want to say it's rare, but it's a great commodity to surround yourself with those people. Working with them to this day, still. I mean, I think we built a brewery 2.5 years ago, and to this day, we're still doing projects with them. But I think that project, not just for the project itself, but for the client, good people. When you can lead a project and you become good friends, I think that is the tale of a great day at work.
Yeah, that was the only place that I actually knew that I personally know that you've completed, but that brewery itself, it's so cool. The design aspect, the look of it, everything is, I was there 2 weeks ago. I mean, everything's awesome. Right. And then I remember when I had Naveen on here, you hit me up, you shot me a message. You're like, I know that guy. And he's such a good guy. He's just very down to earth type of guy and very genuine. Like, he's just a good person. So
they're infectious, right? You want to be around them.
Totally. Yeah. And the place itself, the brewery itself is just gorgeous. Like it's a great design and great work. So
it was a fun project.
Yeah. How do you market yourself? When you guys started 20 years ago, the internet was like just happening, so it wasn't social media presence that it is today. How did you market yourself then compared to now? And what have you found to be good and bad use of marketing?
So that's a great question, because we didn't market as young kids, as young guys. We didn't really Target. We didn't do mailings. We didn't, you know, we had some, you know, we had some logos on the side of our trucks after a couple of years, after we could afford to put them on.
Yeah.
It really was word of mouth for us. And it was the service piece of it, kind of gaining a reputation for, you know, we'll make sure it's done.
Yeah.
We'll do it right. And we'll treat you right while we're doing it. I'd like to think that that's how the original marketing worked, but at some point you want to get over the threshold of your own personality and your own skill sets. And that was probably about the time that the internet started to make its, you know, social media started to make its waves. We use, we have a marketing team here, a marketing director, and she uses social media phenomenally.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that I know how she does it, but I like what she does and I work with her on it. But, you know, her reach has been pretty good for us. That's probably the number one outreach that we do. Beyond that, it really is about networking. I think we talked about it at the beginning. It's about the people. It's about servicing them, looking for the callback. Maybe they'll give you a referral, and just building over, you know, after 15, 20 years, that network becomes pretty big.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's just a number. If you get past the first, I'd say 3 to 5 years, like you've built such a wide network of people that referrals just come to you, and you know, you're not really sure where they came from or how they came from, but it's through the depth of the relationships that you've built. Right. Over the years. So, I mean, 20 years in, yeah. I mean, you have so many relationships, I imagine.
Yeah, we do. We do. And they're fun ones, you know. You know, you have contentious moments in business, but for the most part, you know, every client that we've run across, whether we're doing another project for them, they've either, you know, thrown us a project of their own, referred us to someone else. You know, same thing with us. You know, we try to give back, right? It's that kind of pay it forward scenario where we can help them achieve an opportunity or find a solution to something. You know, introduce them to someone within network. It goes both ways.
Yeah.
So I think for us, like I said, it really is just about that human interaction.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. One thing topic we can get into, you know, you just touched upon it a little bit ago is COVID, the impact of COVID. Certain industries have definitely had a much more negative impact than others. You know, mm-hmm. The restaurant industry, breweries, you know, like Naveen and Muddy Squirrel, you know, they got to battle all these issues and these regulations. How have you guys been impacted by COVID?
Well, it's another great question. So we had a good year, right? I'd like to say we had a great year, but it did not come without its struggles, right? So right at the beginning, you don't know. I think it was the unknowns, the downstaffing, the shutdown. We had three large projects in Boston shut down on us. And then when Massachusetts went with its shutdown, we lost a lot of projects. I should say we lost them. We kept them under contract, but we, you know, had to shut down. Luckily, we were diversified in New Hampshire, Rhode Island. Stayed open. They allowed construction. We were considered essential.
Wow.
They allowed us to travel in and out to do the work as long as we maintained, you know, safe protocol, which we did. We put a lot of effort into our protocol, whether it was, you know, hand sanitizers or masks.
Yeah.
You know, right out of the gate, we donated a bunch of masks to the hospitals and found out that we all had to wear them. Right. So that's some of that miscommunication from the state. You know, I'm happy to donate. I wish I could do it every day. Right. Like you wish you could make sure they're all taken care of. But then when they turn around and tell you, now you're going to get your N95, you're like, just give them away.
No figure. So,
you know, there was that struggle, but I have to be honest with you. I was proud of our team. Our team was epic.
Yeah.
You know, we pulled together in the first, I'd say it was the first week or two, we pulled a big Zoom call together, got everybody on the horn and said, listen, let's get our contract signed. Let's get the jobs that we're doing closed out. And any jobs that we're still performing, we now have the bodies. So, you know, let's not let people go.
Yep.
Let's attack these with full service. So we were able to go down to Newport and we worked on the Wayfinder Hotel, which was a full renovation during the entire process. So we were able to staff it up pretty good.
Wow.
And we actually won an award for it through Associated Builders and Contractors. And it was the Resiliency Award. And it was really cool for us because what that was saying to us is that, you know, through that COVID process, we were able to be resilient and kind of fight off the virus itself in a work environment and still complete project, good quality projects, you know?
So that's awesome. Congrats on the award.
Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of pride there. I wish COVID didn't exist. And I feel bad for a lot of those people, the restaurants, the hotels, you know, the service industry workers. I think, you know, for me, there's got to be some sort of payback as the economy opens up with them. And, you know, I would say if anybody's listening, get out there, tip big, tip a lot, and go out to eat and go to some hotels. And anybody who's out there who's been affected, you know, see if you can help them out.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the reason why I wanted to start the podcast in general. So I launched it last May, and it's because all these restaurants and breweries in particular, just like they have no choice. They're getting absolutely smoked and they have no choice over what they can do. They got to shut down. They got to have 25% capacities. They got to open up outdoor areas. And if they don't have an outdoor area, it's too bad. So, you know, I've asked previous guests that have been on the podcast, like the response they've seen, like people are unbelievable. Everyone's supporting local, everyone's tipping big just because they're just trying to help us out. And yeah, it's, you know, it's not always monetary, but at the end of the day, if you can help someone out a little bit, it goes a long way. So
yeah, you know, we're big believers in that here. If you can pay it forward just a little bit,
yeah,
you know, hopefully a lot, but you know, just a little bit, every little bit counts. Absolutely. Even if you're just making a person's day just a little bit better, you know, like you said, it's not monetary. It's maybe a smile on the face or, you know, someone cares.
You had mentioned the hospitality earlier. So I would imagine, like, when I was going to ask you this question, I'm like, I bet you he got crushed by those hospitality, like, industries that they were going into when COVID hit, because they had to shut down a bunch of just hotels in general.
Sure. You know, what's weird is we were able to maintain construction schedules with the hospitality, whether it was restaurants. I think we built a couple of restaurants during quarantine and COVID. Two hotels we worked on. The difference is you're working in those hotels and they're unoccupied.
True.
You know, and the general manager's there and he's working every day and he's just watching us. No rooms are full. You know, he's just sitting there like, you know, this is awkward, right? So yeah. It was tough. I think, you know, being around those general managers and the service teams that were on site when we were there, you could feel a stress level. But for us personally, I don't want to say it was advantageous for schedules, but it was, right? So you're able to go to a hotel with no guests walking around and get some construction done. The restaurant side was a little different. That was tough for any of this construction we were doing in restaurants. You know, they went into these projects maybe say last January or February with contracts, leases, and then all of a sudden they don't have income, right? They have no income and they're under a contract with you and a lease with maybe a plaza. And they're staring at their books going, there's no money coming in. How do I do this? Yeah. So you have to be, I don't really know what the word is for it, but you have to be innovative, I guess, to help them work through the situation and continue to stay open yourself, right? To understand, I think the word would probably be empathetic. Understand the shoes they're standing in. And hopefully you can help. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. It definitely was an odd situation with a lot of the restaurants.
Yeah.
And the brewery. We did have one brewery that we had under contract. Not build. We're still there. They still want to do it, but you know, they're 2 years from the last time they really had a chance to plan, you know?
Wild.
Yeah. Wild. It's sad. It's sad, but knock on wood, it'll come back and people will be better for it.
Yeah, hopefully. So not including COVID, has the industry changed much in the last 20 years since you guys started?
No. The answer this year changed more than it had in the 19 years prior.
Yeah.
Right? You saw this kind of move. Construction industry tends to, you know, for a stat, the tradespeople are, the average age is about 55 in our industry, right? So for lack of a better word, you have these stubborn old people, right? Like they're stuck in their ways. We always want to bring technology to the space. It's there. It's out on the fringes. There's some big companies that do real well with it. Boston companies that are unbelievable with their construction technology, using it, implementing it, designing it. But it really didn't kind of take a foothold really like it should have until COVID hit. And then, you know, people realize you can work from home.
Yeah.
You can look at blueprints. You can scan blueprints. You can email people. You can do 3D scanning of job sites with one or two people instead of running around with tape measures. You know, there was really this kind of like, wait a second. Yeah, you have to spend some money on it. But I think it was the first glimpse that I've had since we've been in the industry that technology will take a foothold and it will really help streamline our industry. And for me, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Because you know, when you get stale, it tends to get boring. And when you start to see new innovation come in and these young kids with a lot of energy and fervor for the industry and in a different way, it's over my head.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to keep up with it. But I think it's super exciting for all of us.
Yeah, I would agree. I think obviously the situation itself sucks, but I think it's going to change the way a lot of companies do business going forward. I mean, I know just in my industry, majority of our meetings, like 95% of them are going to be Zoom probably going forward. You know, I miss the camaraderie of seeing people in the office for sure. But even just the travel, I mean, even just going into Boston, you know, I would leave early enough where it was 30 minutes to go in, but it was 45, 60 to get home every single day. And it's just now I literally have that hour and a half in the back of my life at all times now.
It's nice, isn't it? Gain a little bit of life back.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like I was telling you before, we hopped on, like I take a full hour for lunch and I don't even feel guilty anymore. Like I'm just sitting at home. The computer is still on, but I take a full hour with no guilt because it's still less time I would have had driving throughout.
Right. Right.
So like it's still,
multiply that over the year, man. That's a lot of hours back on your life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I'm a big reader. So like I read 30 minutes every morning. I mean, that I can have a full hour of lunch and read in the same amount of time that I would have driven. And like, I'm just mentally, it's just more relaxing for me. It's better. So, I mean, there's definitely some positives that are going to come out of it with right. industries going forward for sure.
I agree. I think no one wanted to shut down. No one wanted to deal with, you know, a virus. No one wants people die or get sick. But I believe, I'm a firm believer in every bad situation, a lot of good is created. And I think technology, I think, I'd like to say that a lot of people have kind of taken a step back and they realize what they had. And there's a little bit more respect for the people around them and totally. Life in general. Yep. I think they've kind of realized that, you know, there's more to life than the grind, right?
100%.
And I think that's been a big part of this. You know, we just watch around our office, even personally, you know, in the construction world, it can be fast paced sometimes. Yeah. And you find yourself telling people more often now, like, you know, leave early, get out of here, go spend time with your family. I think it's changed behaviors in a good way, I think.
No, I agree. I mean, it's funny, before I get into my industry, never pictured myself working in Boston. And then I did, specifically Boston, for about 2 straight years. And I loved the fast paced energy. But what this allowed me to do is realize, I mean, March and April, I met neighbors just by walking around the neighborhood, because that's really all we could do in March and April last year. I mean, you could not do anything. Really just appreciate the people that are actually around you. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you realize so many things just don't really matter. You know, you're putting so much energy into this shit that just doesn't matter. And now you really focus on the stuff that's important, and even just like walks around the neighborhood with my wife and my dog. And it was,
isn't it great?
It was awesome, man. Like it was, yeah loved it. We do it every single day, every morning, every evening. We do it every day. We never did that before. We'll see what happens going forward. Hopefully things will calm down by the summertime or so.
Yeah, but let's hope we don't forget the good lessons and we do forget the bad ones.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So are there any common myths or misconceptions when it comes to, you know, the construction industry itself?
Oh, that's a loaded question. myths, misconceptions. I would say probably one of the bigger myths and misconceptions is that it's a man's world.
Okay.
It's not. Yep. Some of the most successful, most intelligent, most talented people in our industry are females. And I think that gets overlooked. You know, I'm not talking just architects. You know, we have a group here of project managers and assistant project managers that I lean on them for everything. And I know they say there's not a lot of women in our industry, which is true, but there's definitely a misconception that it's not for them. And I would say to anybody, it is. They fit in. They're just as talented as the rest of us.
Yep.
That'll probably be the biggest misconception, I think. I think the other one would be that the construction industry is filled with these grunts, I guess you'd call them, laborers. And it's not. I mean, it's some of the most intelligent, smartest people that you can surround yourselves with. I mean, I tell my guys all the time and my girls all the time that if you're in this industry, you're building everybody's office, you're building everybody's hotel, you know, everything every human does is covered by your building, right? That you're sheltering the whole world. So don't let them tell you you're just a laborer. Don't let, you know, you guys are, you're very, you know, it's a bright group of people and it takes a lot. It's an army. Construction is, I don't want to say it's the military, but, you know, marshaling for a big project is marshaling tons of vendors and subcontractors to work together as a team. So it's a very intelligent world compared to what the perception may be out there.
And those are great answers. Those are awesome answers. So what do you see for the future of the Haynes Group? You know, 1 year, 5 year, 20 years, like what do you see for the future of the Haynes Group? You going to go in all 50 states or what?
That might be a little tough task. You never know, right? Because, you know, every time you hit a benchmark, it's never enough. Yep. And it's not, you know, you don't chase dollars, right? I tell people all the time, there's a certain point which dollars aren't relative, right? It's really more about the challenge and the people. So I don't know if I could answer where we will end up, but I can tell you I'll probably die in this office, right? That's what I know. You know, I love it. I love work. I love the people. Hopefully, my son will step in, and my nephews and nieces, nice. And my daughter. Who knows? You know, I may be here telling them you're still working for me.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you just said that. Kind of lead me into my next question is, you know, entrepreneurs, I notice it's a hard time to just shut off. And I ask everyone this, you know, outside of being physically or mentally incapable of working, do you think you'll ever 100% retire, or will you always have your hand in, you know, the Haynes Group or something in general?
I will have my hand in something in general. Yeah. You know, in my dream world, it's kind of a mentoring role, right? Yeah. It's the ability to work with young people and give them energy in whatever sector they want to be in, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best thing you could do in life is kind of hand off any limited knowledge you may have to, you know, people who still have a lot left. But as far as retirement, I don't see it.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you'd roll my dead body out of here.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. It seems boring to me. I mean, right. My mind's always going. I always have other ideas, and I'll always do something, I think. Obviously, you know, from old and crepit, I can't really walk around too much, but I always want to be doing something. It just sounds.
No, I know you. I know you. I've watched you for a lot of years, man. Yeah. You're a go-getter. Go, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that body in motion stays in motion. And, you know, I think it's hard to stop that.
Yeah, exactly. Like my wife, she always makes fun of me too. Cause I mean, I'm up at 4, right? So before I was doing what I was doing now, I was up at 3. So 4 genuinely feels like I'm sleeping in, right? And like, she's like, you're not even delivering early in the morning like you used to. Like, why the hell are you getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning? And it's like, I get so much done before 8. You know, before anyone else is even in their office, I clean out all my emails. Like you just get so much done. She's like, you're nuts. But you know, like, it's just, I don't know. Like it's in my blood now. And that's just 4 o'clock it is what it is. Maybe when I'm 50, it'll be 5. I don't know.
Right. But, right. It's tough to explain to another person who doesn't have that kind of entrepreneurial or just go-getter mentality, what it's like, right? You just kind of brain's always going, you're always moving, but it's fun. I wouldn't have it any other.
No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Totally. We've talked a lot about the business. Talk about yourself, you know, personally a little bit. Say you were retiring or on a vacation. What are some of the hobbies that you enjoy doing, you know, with your family?
So my favorite hobby at this point in my life is watching my kids in sports.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I miss it. COVID really crushed me, right? Yeah. If I was going to shed a tear, it would be over not being able to watch the kids participate.
Yeah.
And even when they were participating, not being allowed to go watch them or trying to watch a game on Zoom, that is my pleasure. My pleasure is watching them succeed. Used to be coaching them. Now they're older and I don't get to coach anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the foreseeable future, that's it for me. I mean, it's you know, the things I like to do. I like to golf. I like to play sports. But for the most part, it's just watching them. It's the best part of life.
Yeah. Your son, he's a very good baseball player from what I've seen on, you know, between yourself and Jesse's Facebook posts.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete.
He is. He's good. He's fun. You know, he's a good kid. He's probably 10 times harder worker than I am. He's just driven to work. Awesome. You know, both of my daughter, she's a good gymnast. She just had surgery, so she's out for a little bit. But it's tough to watch a 13-year-old with knee surgery, but she'll bounce back better than I would.
Yeah, of course. and I didn't know you were a golfer, so I'm a...
I've used that word lately.
Oh, well, I'm not. I mean, you enjoy golfing.
Right.
I'm on the same wavelength. I enjoy golfing. I'm not good, but I'm a member at the Framingham Country Club. So I'll have you come down sometime.
I will. A good friend of mine works up there. Actually, my best friend growing up worked. I think he's still there. He was at Framingham. He may be gone now, but Pete Campanaria was
Pete?
A good friend of mine. Yeah. I think he was running the bar there.
Yes. Pete, he still runs the bar. He's like one of I just joined last summer. He's like one of 6 people that I actually know by their first name, but he runs the bar.
We're up next to each other. He's a good dude.
No kidding. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll mention your name first time I get to golf.
You can play with him.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. So, you know, you said you got to travel a bunch, you know, when you were younger. Any favorite cities or countries that you visited up to this point or any on the wish list?
On the wish list, I'm a huge, like my dream in life is to go to Africa and see and go on a safari.
Nice.
Like it's been in my blood since I was about 10 years old, just to, you know, kind of go out in the wild and just watch the animals run. I've always wanted to do it. My wife is not too keen on it, so it's going to have to be with me and the kids.
Yeah.
I might be able to talk her into it in the future. That's my dream place. That's my dream trip. Right now though, my go-to is Key West. That's my go-to, you know, go live a little island life when it's stressful and, you know, spend some time with the kids in the ocean and just chill.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Like current.
Safari, huh? Nice.
Yeah. You know, I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's just been one of those things, right?
Yeah. No, it's cool. You see, what about me? So on our honeymoon, we went to Hawaii, loved Hawaii. We were supposed to go back there last year for our anniversary, but obviously COVID detracted that. But I mean, top of my list, Ireland's on the top of my list. Greece, there's a couple places on the top of my list that we were planning on actually going to both of them last year, but that didn't happen. So it depended on travel this year, maybe this year, but
and make it happen.
Yeah, it's the plan, man. Right. All right. So last couple of questions. If you could tell your 18-year-old self, what would you tell him?
Whoa.
I love this question.
If I could tell my 18-year-old self, what would I tell him? I'd probably tell him the world's not a bad place.
Yeah.
Right? I'd probably tell him, like, don't worry about all the noise in the background. Don't worry about what people say about you. Don't worry about what you hear. Don't let anything get in your way. Just, you know, kind of open your eyes and just enjoy every minute that you have, because, you know, really, what do you get out of it unless you do that, right? You can spend your whole life angry. And I didn't. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, you go to that early life stage and you're not sure what you want.
Yep.
And I think that's okay. I think it's okay. I think it's part of it. And yeah. I would tell them that's okay. And just you'll figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, when you're 18, you don't know anything. Like when you're 18, you graduate high school, you think you're on top of the world. And then, you know, I'm 36 now, you know, I've lived a whole second 18-year-old life. And I was an idiot when I was 18. You know?
Join the club. We all were, you know, you think you know everything. You know, nothing.
No, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
But you'd love to go back and enjoy it. Right.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's like now I'm sounding older. Like if I knew then what I knew now type of thing, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, I think it's, you know, just kind of take a bite out of life and have some fun.
Yeah, because it's harder, too, for kids these age. I mean, social media wasn't as a teenager now. I mean, you know, you got, you know, what, 13 and a 16-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's social media is hard that it's always there. So that, like, they're constantly seeing something, whether it's negative, whether it's positive. Like, it's a hard thing to try to balance as a teenager.
Yeah, it really is, you know, and you don't want to take the technology away from them because that's their form of communication.
Right.
I preach to my kids all the time that interpersonal communication, go talk with people, hang out with your friends, you know, play sport, whatever it is, just go interact with people.
Right.
And I think it's important. And you probably see it in the industry we're in. You know, the people who are on social media or, you know, just they don't interact with humans and you know immediately who they are.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Hiding behind the phones. Yep.
Right. Yeah. Yep. So I think it's important that they you know, get out and interact.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. All right, so last question. This is the question I ask every single guest that I've had on this podcast. Okay. Everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like. So what does success look like to you? How do you define success?
How many lives did you help, I think, probably? Like, how many people did you impact positively?
Yep.
You don't always impact everybody positively, but I think for me, how many lives can you impact positively, whether it be, you know, through relationships, through, you know, just a helping hand? Maybe it's a monetary piece of it, but when you leave this good earth, how many people did you impact? And so if you try to do that, you know, once a day, I think, you know, it's a hard thing to do, but if you can impact enough people and, you know, in your dying days, know that you made at least a little bit of a difference. I think that's success. I've never been one to chase dollars. It's just never been my mentality. I think that comes with the territory. If you do the right thing, that piece of it comes. So the measurement is really just about, you know, the people around you.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great answer. I couldn't agree more. Just genuinely helping people. You know, it's that the givers mentality, right? Like surround yourself with givers and not takers. You know, surround yourself with people that are going to give to yourself and other people. Mm-hmm. And things just end up coming back around because people like you, and it goes back to relationships, and it's just things end up coming around, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of our kind of motto around the office is give more than you get, right? So if you just give more than you get, and eventually it'll come back, you know, times seven.
Yeah.
So you know, hopefully that's how it works out for everybody, you know, but I'd like to think the world was that perfect, but just live my own little world.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. I think it's great. Well, Mike, I appreciate the time. This was awesome having you on. I know we've talked about it for a little bit. So thank you very much for coming on. If anyone's listening, looking for a commercial construction contract work, definitely reach out to the Haynes Group.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me, man. This has been a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. I'll talk to you soon. Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.